Second half of the program begins right now. Special Friday, as we're going to talk to Cliff Illig, one of my absolute favorites to talk to, the owner of Sporting Kansas City. First, I'll let you know, Curtis Siebelt, up in the Northland. He's at the Harrah's Hotel. You can stop on by and take advantage of the Kansas City's premier memorabilia and card show. It's going on right now through Sunday. Over 100 sports card and memorabilia dealers from around the Midwest are there. Special guests, Whit Merrifield, Willie Wilson, Amos Otis, Frank White, Freddie Potts, Alex Gordon, six members of the 85 World Championship team are going to be there. Sunday, Tyreek Hill, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Mecole Hardman, Daniel Sorensen, Derek Nottie, and former Chiefs great Tamba Ali. There is no charge, but for the autographs, you do have to buy a ticket. You can go to shopmosports.com. You can get it right there. Buy it right there when you get to the event. It's Kansas City's premier memorabilia and card show going on at Harrah's tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. Take advantage of it. We take advantage of some time with Cliff Illig, the owner of Sporting Kansas City, co-founder of the Cerner Corporation here in Kansas City. A lot to get to about the World Cup. Potentially coming here to Kansas City, Sporting Kansas City in the midst of a fantastic season, selling off Gianluca Busio. We talked to the man who put this organization on the track it's on right now. That is one Cliff Illig. He joins us here in the program. Mr. Illig, sir, how you doing?
Saran, I'm doing great. I do lament the fact that we're not enjoying our typical environment for these talks.
So. Yeah, it's a little bit different backdrop. Hopefully, next year we'll be back at it and we'll have this conversation out in Lake Tahoe. But it's great to talk to you, first of all, and appreciate the time and the conversation and the insights you give us, and always appreciate the fact that Sporting Kansas City is always up there at the top of the table. How exciting is this year, and how much do you think this team has a chance to bring home another cup in MLS?
Well, we're quite optimistic about that. Clearly, I think, in kind of looking past some of the impacts of the COVID disruption, that sort of thing, back in 2019, we got kind of a difficult start to that year with a bunch of injuries and that sort of thing, and missed the playoffs for the first time in 7 or 8 years. And it caused us to just significantly, as an ownership group, as a team organization, certainly from Peter and his organization standpoint, kind of refocus. We added Polito to our roster along with a number of our young guys, and so this year was really our opportunity to demonstrate it all coming together and working the way that we want it to work. And I think Peter and the guys, as we're halfway through the season here, I think have put up a not just a great record, but they've put up a great series of results against difficult teams that causes the league to have to stop and take notice that we are very much a factor to be dealt with.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Alan Polito, when that signing was made, bringing in what I'll call a big ticket, foreign player, an international designated player to your roster. But then also now here, what, a year and a half or so later, maybe it's 2 years, time flies, and it's definitely flown when you spend a year sitting in your basement. But 2 years later, did you when you bought this club, did you see a time that you'd be making the kind of investment that the club made in Alan Polito, but also returning the kind of returns you got from a homegrown player in Gianluca Busio? I mean, this is kind of the new age of MLS soccer, and Sporting is out there with making big ticket signings, but also able to, sell a talent that was grown in-house. Did you see the league going where it is and your organization getting to the point that it is today to make these kind of, transactions?
Well, I think it's always, whether you're growing a high performance, high potential company, or you're part of a growing sports league and sports endeavor, it's always, I think, a little hard to look out past maybe 4 or 5 years into the future. But the trajectory that our league has been on since 2006, when we acquired the Kansas City franchise from the Hunt family, we've been on a mission. And I think, the one advantage that you and I have of having had a fairly long series of these conversations is I think you can you appreciate that we are on a mission, and that what we're doing today is very much of an extension of what we started 8-10 years ago when we moved into the new Children's Mercy Park facility, and we brought Peter on board. Peter, I think, now is in his 13th year as our coach, most highly lengthy tenured coach in our league. He has put, we've given him a lot of leeway to go create a set of strategies that allows us, even in a small market without some of the economic resources that the big market teams have, to go compete and compete, sequentially one year to the next. And a big part of that is our young players. We've got 11 or 12 of our homegrown players now that are on the senior roster out of 29 guys. And I think we all feel really good when they're out there, and we feel really, really good when we see one of them make the men's national team is from our homegrown program, which Gianluca just did. And then obviously the ability to be able to kind of enter the international market for players adds additional credibility to what Peter's built here and about the quality of the young players we've got coming through. So it's a long-term thing. So if you ask me, hey, did we really see it working out this way? I mean, when you're long-term, you gotta kind of have a vision for where it's all headed. And I think we are pretty good at that. And then the team that we've got around us do an excellent job of everyone doing their part to push us down that path.
Is it, do you have to maybe temper, your enthusiasm? Not your enthusiasm, but do you have to guard against getting carried away? And because we've talked about building the franchise, and I've talked to Peter a lot, and, I remember asking him about, hey, when is there a time back before Alan Pulido was signed? I said, is there a time where you go out and get that big ticket guy? And he said, yeah, there is, but you have to build the team around it. Otherwise, you're bringing a guy in and, his skills won't be able to be showcased. And to that, I think the point is you have to build the organization's strength from within so that you've got great players for this, superstar to come in and play with. And, he laid that out and then he did it. I think that was one of the things I always appreciate about Peter Vermees. He clearly had a plan and a vision, and you mentioned your plan and vision for the organization. I think that's why, you guys have been such a great marriage and why this organization has had such great success. But when you get this and it's working so well and you're seeing all those things, do you have to kind of check yourself and say, okay, let's not run too fast. Let's stay on the pace we're staying on.
I guess, but I don't think we spend a lot of time worrying about whether we're going too fast. Usually, we all recognize that we've got more to do than we frankly have time to do it. And with the distraction that COVID introduced into our world, in terms of, especially on the business side, the economic side, and just from how the league works and all that, it's been difficult, I think, to kind of make everything work. And the thing that we rely on is that, we've laid out a plan. We're working against that plan. Everybody knows what part of that plan that they're responsible for. We're very results focused, and I think we spend a fair amount of time making sure that that if we need to recalibrate and we need to think about doing something significant as we did with Pulido, we'll certainly consider it. But Peter is as we watch the other teams around the league, especially some of the big market teams who almost exclusively build the leadership, the player leadership in their club, through big money transfers, that's just not something that's ever worked for us. And I think Peter has done an excellent job of making sure that when we bring in somebody with Pulido's credentials and credibility on kind of the international stage, that we had a team around him that could help make him look good. The other thing Peter has always done, Saran, is very much focused on a building a culture, right, in our team that is team first focused. And I know you've been through these things with Peter in the past, but he's got a very specific way of doing things. He wants players that come in, regardless of how they get here, whether we grow them internally or whether we bring them in from the outside, he wants players that fit and that will complement the people that we already have. So when you put all that together, you end up looking at at the roster we put out on the field, and there's a combination of young, high potential guys, along with veterans that have been around our club for a number of years, the Espinosas and the Zusis and those type guys. And then you throw in a few players that can play at the top of the league, whether it's on offense, defense, or, in the goal. And, it really puts, it's really a formula that works pretty well, at least for us. Right. And, I think Peter's beginning to prove to everybody else in the league, that it's an approach that stands up well, even against those models where they spend two or three times as much as we spend on key players in their team and try to build their clubs around that.
We're talking to Cliff Illig here in the program. A lot has been written of late about how the MLS has embraced, you know, the type of transaction that you made with Gianluca Busio, that maybe that wasn't something the league wanted to do in the past, but now it's embraced it. Was that the ownerships of MLS coming together and saying, this is what we need to do? Or did one team step out there and have success doing that, you know, get the return of the dollars, then reinvest that in the team, and everybody said, okay, no, this is a better way to do business?
Well, I think it's a little broader than that, Seren. It's, we fundamentally, in addition to, you know, building a world-class sports league and one that can stand up impressively against the other major sports leagues in this country, we also, as an ownership, a broad ownership group at MLS, believe that we have a significant obligation to make soccer in the United States more important and more meaningful on the world stage. And a big part of that is producing players. And a big part of that is becoming a, you know, potentially even a net exporter of soccer talent. And as we watch, you know, the activity overseas, the astronomical transfer fees and things that are paid, you know, it's obvious that on a worldwide basis, there is, you know, who you are as a league has a lot to do with what you contribute to that supply chain of players. So, in addition to that, because of the way we approach our ownership group at large, and I'm talking about across the league now, commit themselves to spending relatively significant amounts of money on their academy programs. Here in Kansas City, we have a very large number or percentage of the youth players in the city that wear our logo. And, there's always a few really high quality young players that move from the youth programs into our academy program and eventually move it into our lower division league program and learn not only how to be better soccer players, but learn to compete on a basis that makes them highly professional. I think that is something that our ownership group at large spends a lot of time on. Michael Illig runs, works with Peter very closely on that. Michael is involved in several of the league committees that focus on that sort of thing, and it is a big part of the agenda that ownership that participates on those committees has for what we need to be doing to improve our league, the way we present ourselves, the way we, that we compete against our friends from Mexico. The way we compete in some of these international tournaments and things that are always on the calendar amongst our season, all of those things, in all those ways, we want to be able to present soccer in the United States is much more formidable.
And to that point, we're talking to Cliff Illig here in the program. To that point, I read a thing recently that the average value of an MLS club is now $550 million. And that puts it on par with English Premier League values with everybody except for the big six clubs, the sure. Arsenal, the Man U, the Man City, Chelsea. Let's see if I can rattle it off. Liverpool and Tottenham, maybe I think is the one.
Yep.
I'm forgetting.
Yeah, they'd be in that group.
Yeah. Other than those six, the MLS clubs now rival in value what are the rest of the EPL and the big clubs overseas. You know, and you could throw in the two big Spanish clubs, PSG and France. But otherwise, I mean, the MLS, as far as value, has grown to be the equal of the other leagues. I mean, that's got to be quite satisfying to know that, you know, this league has grown to that point.
Yeah, we've got, you know, and obviously when we got involved in the league back in 2006 as an ownership group, the league was 11, 12 teams. And now we have 27 teams playing. We have 29 teams with Charlotte and St. Louis coming in 22 and 23. And you know, you can expect that, you know, probably in the relatively near future, we'll announce a 30th team. So, yeah, growth in that way. And if you go through and add up all the valuations that whether they're some of the periodicals or people that follow the financial stuff and the sports in our league specifically, you add up the estimated value of all our teams, and it's $14-15 billion. And you know, back when the mid 2000s when we got involved, that number was less than probably $700-800 million. Across all the teams. So, yeah, and I think that, you know, that it's not all about that. It's all about the thing, you know, making our league credible in a number of dimensions. And obviously fan acceptance, fan growth, the economics that don't necessarily accrue directly to our teams, but are all those things that happen through broadcast or sponsorships or ticket organizations, companies like Fanatics and those sort of, there's all kinds of economics that are now highly stimulated by what's happened with the growth of soccer in this country generally, and then MLS specifically. So, you know, and again, it's not, you know, this is not a destination thing. This is a journey thing. And I think we're making good progress. We've got a great, great group of owners. You know, we've got six or seven of our owners or our ownership groups are NFL owners. And the rest are very accomplished people in a number of cities across the country. For instance, the Taylor family in St. Louis who did Enterprise Rent-A-Car, are doing the new team in St. Louis. You just put all that together, and we got to feel really good about the potential for what it is that we're rolling into.
If my daughter, one daughter has $5 and the other one has $10, we don't worry too much about the economic disparity. If you're going to have a business and it's a lemonade stand and one has $5 and one has $10, we think, they got a pretty good chance to do it. When the stakes raise and one team, one organization is worth $500 million and another is worth $1 billion, that disparity, while the actual math to it is the same, the disparity as far as operating and competing is quite bigger. It's a bigger difference. That has arrived to the MLS, has it not? And how hard is it to compete? You know, Royals fans are well aware of it. They've heard it, which, by the way, people, I think, know that you are quite the Royals fan as well. But Royals fans have been forced to become baseball economists and understand the economics of the game. Is the MLS now taking on more of a role or more of a look like baseball, or is it still more with the salary cap able to look resemble more of the NFL?
Well, one of the things that we did the Cerner thing, one of the things that always struck us is how complex things like healthcare and technology were, and how every day we kind of lived at the intersection of those two. One of the things I've been struck by in sports is how complex the business is. How many different things are there that you got to manage? It's not just about selling tickets and putting butts in seats. You know, that's important, and we do a pretty good job of that here in Kansas City. But there's a lot of other things that if you're gonna realize the potential for what we all invested in, what we've all got started here, and what we believe we can accomplish, every day you're trying to navigate those complexities to find a way to get to get to your goals. And yeah, some of those have an economic dimension, has something to do with that. Yeah, Arthur Blank in Atlanta, who puts 55,000 people in a Mercedes-Benz Stadium there for every single soccer game in Atlanta. When you walk into that building, you don't see a Falcons logo. You see, Atlanta soccer logos. You see 55,000 people standing up for every minute of the game. And it's just an incredible environment. Well, that doesn't come naturally. That's something you have to manage. And, you know, managing that kind of a fan experience, creating that kind of environment is absolutely key then to having broadcasters be excited about coming to your building and broadcasting your games. The more broadcasters are excited about broadcasting your games, the more economics that they will attract from sponsors that want to sponsor those games. So it all kind of fits together. And just because we're smaller out here in Kansas City, we still have a lot to accomplish. And yeah, we've got to go find ways of maybe generating economic capabilities or revenue from sources that some of the other guys don't have to worry about because they're in very large markets. And when you look at team valuations, so much of those valuations have to do with the potential of the individual markets as opposed to how well the individual teams are doing. I think, though, Kansas City does a very good job of showing up on those lists of valuations and that sort of thing, representing the combination of things that we do relatively well that are appreciated by our fans, that are appreciated by the broadcasters and the sponsors.
We're talking with Cliff Illig, the owner for Sporting Kansas City. Let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Sporting Kansas City and what happened this week at the League's Cup match. We'll get into that, the importance of those tournaments and what they mean and do for the league. It is Sporting Kansas City owner Cliff Illig with us here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Yeah, you know it. Let's go.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. You're on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. We are pleased to be joined by the owner of Sporting Kansas City, one Cliff Illig, is with us here in the program. And the Allegis match did not go, I know, the way anybody wanted it to go. Cliff, I know, that tough scheduling spot there for Peter Vermees playing all these games. I think it's, seven games in 22 days. I apologize for not having that number. But, it's a different culture in soccer, playing these tournaments that are outside of your regular just league play. Why is it so important for Sporting to play in these cups instead of just playing like the more American traditional schedule of just playing your own regular season?
Well, I think it's soccer worldwide. If you look at, even the EPL, as important as it is to be at the top of the table at the end of that EPL season, is the focus they have on winning the UEFA championship. They have the FA championship inside of England that is very important to them as well. And then obviously everybody is expected to participate in these international tournaments and things where you're not playing for your club, you're playing for your country. And, so all of those things are part of soccer's culture worldwide. Now, here in the U.S., and again, I made the point earlier that we want to be relevant on a worldwide basis. We want to make soccer with the very significant demographic that goes with the Hispanics and, the shift in diversity and disparity in our culture here, it is incredibly important for us to be not be viewed as insular by soccer fans, in our country, in our city, and in our country, and then across North America, and even on a worldwide basis. So that's the investment we have to make is finding economically justifiable ways of kind of integrating up against our regular season stuff these special competitions. And we saw the Gold Cup from a national team standpoint attract as much attention as it did. We host several of those games here in Kansas City, which were very well received. We've got the Nations Cup. We've got this League's Cup. competition. We had normally have the Open Cup, which has been suspended temporarily because of the COVID stuff. And each one of those, it's a little different. The Open Cup is about the championship of all professional teams in the US of A. And these other things are about what goes on in soccer in North America. And, you know, I think the Mexican, soccer fans think their brand of soccer is better than our brand of soccer. And it's up to us to go give them, you know, to submit our argument against that.
Right.
And we do that in these competitions. And yeah, I mean, you know, Peter was, you know, with the intense schedule that we had, you know, he had to make some choices. I really admire him because, you know, against Leon, he was really short of some of our out front players. And so he played some of the younger guys in the first half, and it felt very strong that those younger guys could hold their own. And then we would be in a position to bring on some of the more experienced players later in the game. It just didn't work out that way. So, it's not that we don't, and you know, we certainly believe that the League's Cup is an important activity for us. I don't expect every one of our fans to kind of get it in the near term, but I think over the long term, with where we intend to go with that competition with Mexico over time, it's going to be a very impressive part of what we call soccer here in North America.
The great American philosopher Ric Flair once said, "If you want to be the best, you got to beat the best." And I think that's, you know, everybody loves that phrase, and, you know, and I hear kids even, you know, mimic it. But so often, I think too often in this country, people are afraid to actually go challenge the best. They'd rather sit on the side and just say, well, I didn't lose, so therefore I'm better. And I think to go challenge yourself as a league and as an organization individually against the Mexican teams shows great strength. Right. If you're willing to go up against an opponent that is at least your equal or maybe better at this time, that shows the confidence in what you're doing and where you're going. So I commend it. I love it. I mean, I certainly, you know, I look forward to better results, right? Like we all do.
Sure.
Absolutely. But I love the idea. You don't get better unless you go challenge yourself against the best. And I think this is all part of the process. And the league is, you know, I would think anybody who's had any time around the MLS has certainly seen the remarkable growth and the growth in play. Not just, you know, we talked about the financial, but the play on the field speaks for itself. I mean, if you turned on a game from 10, 12 years ago, you would see the difference in the caliber of play. And so to me, as a soccer fan, like when I heard that, like, wow, another tournament, I kind of had that initial reaction. And then I said to myself, well, they've done nothing but get better all along. So I'm going to assume that the guys that have been driving have an idea of what they're doing, and this is going to go in a good direction. And I would encourage everybody else to view it the same way, because I think it will be great. And I think getting more competitions and playing the Mexican teams that have some very strong teams will do nothing but improve soccer in this country. I think it's without a doubt going to be a huge strength for us. And we talked, you know, I remember a couple of years ago about the World Cup and what that would mean. Do you have an update on getting the World Cup to Kansas City? Do you feel confident it's going to happen? And what would that mean for soccer here locally?
Oh, it's absolutely huge. You know, Clark Hunt and I kind of chair the group that is working hard to bring the World Cup matches to Kansas City. And I chatted about it this week. You know, it's not hard to recognize that World Cup games in Kansas City would not be only be the culmination of Lamar Hunt's vision for soccer and its impact on this community, but it also will drive $600 or $700 million worth of economic impact, you know, to our region. And you know, we're one of 17 teams that's committing that is competing for 10 to 11 spots to host games here in the U.S. There will be some games in Canada and some games in Mexico, because we're going to be jointly hosting the World Cup for the world. But it's going to be a much larger field in 2026. It'll be a 48-team field. They're going to be in the U.S. for 3 weeks. They're going to be playing games in those 10 or 11 cities across the country. And I think, as anybody that's ever watched or been around a World Cup thing knows, is that the number of international fans and international visitors and guests that go that that follow the teams into the World Cup competition is just extraordinary. So this would be the biggest single sporting event that or sports oriented event that Kansas City's ever seen, and I'm not sure whether it's Republican National Conventions or anything else. I think that this will probably be the opportunity Kansas City has to do something that not only puts us on the world stage, but establishes us is to be in the top 10 sports oriented cities in our country, and that I think goes beyond NFL and NBA and the other leagues. It will be a dramatic thing. And, Kansas City is well recognized as a great place for soccer. We're well positioned in the competition to be one of those seasons, one of those cities. As I talk to people around the country, they kind of assume, because of all the great assets we have here from a soccer standpoint and where we are in the middle of the country, that we're pretty much a lock for being one of the host cities. I never assume that we're a lock on anything. We got to work for it. And that's what Clark and I were spending our time talking about, is how do we now energize the rest of the civic community and the business community to help do some of the things that need to be done to position us very well as FIFA comes in October for their site visit and is looking then to narrow the field down dramatically and potentially even get to the point where they announce in the next year or so, what cities will host the World Cup in America in 2026.
You'd never call it a lock, but do you feel good about where Kansas City sits right now?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and again, from, and we host a lot of other MLS ownership teams here in town when they come in with their teams, or they come in to see, the facility that we've got, the training facility that we've got, out near the stadium. Pinnacle is I think recognized as the very best training facility in the country. Everybody, all the other teams come here and look at it and are amazed by it and amazed how we use it. And then they look at the number of high quality field complexes that we've got here in the city and what we're able to do for the youth programs here. And then I think that they recognize that it's not just about sporting and what we do in soccer. Clearly the Clark and the Chiefs organization has been highly complimentary of the growth of soccer in this region. And now, with its indoor facility and its new soccer facilities over in Lawrence, we've got a complement of the things that will be very, very attractive. Not just for games in the city, but for bringing other teams, bringing in what they call base camps for these teams. As they come in for 3 weeks, they come in and they bring a bunch of their fans with them. So we want to be relevant to all of that, as FIFA considers, our candidacy to be one of the host cities. And I think as we get towards the end of the year, we'll feel really good about where we stand.
Why is it? I mean, a lot of what you're talking about there, right, has nothing to do. I'm Sporting Kansas City's in the mix of it, right? Having the facilities and everything that you have is part of what gets that bid there. But why? This is largely a civic endeavor on your part and your family's part. You mentioned Mike, your son, who I know works very hard at this as well. You know, why for the Illig family? And of course, I should not forget the boss, Bonnie, who I know the kind of time she puts in and putting up with you guys, right? And everything along those lines and all the traveling she does as well. So please, by the way, and give my best to your lovely wife as well. But, this is this is not just a business venture, right? Like, why is doing something that is very much about the overall interest of the city so important to the Illig family, to you personally and your family?
Well, we've been very fortunate as a family, the Patterson family, and with Neil and I as partners in the Cerner endeavor. You know, build a company, ends up being the largest private employer here in town. It's 12,000-13,000 associates, employees, with a billion plus annual payroll here in town. And we didn't set out to be all that, as we kind of talked about earlier. How far out can you look? But that's the way it's turned out, and it's turned out not only to be something that gives our families the flexibility to do some other potentially important things, but it also is huge in terms of the economic impact that it has on our region, and the brand that Kansas City can build is not only a great place to out in the middle of the country where you think about ag and its impact, you think about plant and animal sciences, or you think about, frankly, sports architecture and some of those things that are based here in Kansas City. You also think about Kansas City because of it being a technology center. So the endeavor of soccer and what we've done with sporting over the last 15 years, and where we're, you know, the impact that we see that the World Cup may have on putting a really important exclamation point behind all that is just really, really good for the community. And it's not about getting credit for it and all that. It's being able to, in the future, look around and find that Kansas City is a major league city in the minds of the rest of the country, largely because of these sports things that we do and we do well. And we want it to be something that causes us to also feel good about what it does for everybody in our region from an economic impact standpoint. So occasionally I think as entrepreneurs and things, you get accused of jousting with windmills and just kind of fighting through things. But in this case, it is a very purposeful commitment that we and our fellow owners making this, our team organization, Jake and his group, and Peter and his group, and the organization, we all know we've got something big to prove here. And if we do it well, it's going to make our community much, much better in a number of dimensions.
All right, that is Cliff Illig. When we come back, we'll get into the newest member of Sporting Kansas City's ownership group. You might know him. He wears number 15. More with Cliff Illig here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Gosh, I was such a reject in school. If only someone could have just stuffed food down the front of my pants, and I felt so much more important.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Don't forget Kansas City's premier memorabilia and card show going on today through Sunday up at Harrah's. Over 100 sports cards and memorabilia dealers from around the Midwest are right here in town, plus a number of Royals, Chiefs signing. Tomorrow it's the Royals. Sunday it's the Chiefs, like Tyreek Hill, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Mecole Hardman, Daniel Sorensen, Derek Nnadi, and former Chiefs great Tamba Hali. It's at Harrah's right now. Go check it out. If you're a sports memorabilia fan, you will love it. Cliff, you mentioned earlier about the ownership group, a new member, pretty popular new member, Patrick Mahomes, joining the ownership group. Why was it important to bring Patrick Mahomes into this group?
Well, Patrick is a very interesting young man. Not only is he an exceptional athlete and a unicorn at his position in football, he and his team think at a different level in terms of what that could mean, not just for him, but for the community that he's a part of. And so clearly through his bringing Super Bowl championships to Kansas City is a very big part of that. But at the same time, he's a baseball fan. His dad was a professional player. He grew up in that in that game, and he wanted to be a part of John Sherman's Royals effort, and has become an owner there. And really, soccer was very much the same thing for him. He loves the game. His wife has been very involved in the game growing up, and is now one of the owners of the NWSL team. here in Kansas City that Chris and Angie Long are owning and driving forward. And I think being part of our group was just a way for him to feel much more involved in the community. And I think, you know, even as he looks past his NFL career, he wants to be, you know, he wants to be in Kansas City. He wants to be a part of the community, and this was a really good way to do it. And we were incredibly happy to have him join us. He didn't come in with a lot of, you know, a lot of asks or expectations, you know, but we get along extremely well with he and his team. And, you know, we're just going to, you know, we're going to just see where it goes. And the league was incredibly pleased with approving him as a new owner of Sporting. And we've seen some of those things pop up in other places like Austin and L.A., obviously, and some of that. But, you know, having a highly visible non-soccer celebrity that's part of our team environment seems to be one of the things that, you know, creates fan interest in what we're doing. And I couldn't be more pleased by the reception that Patrick and Patrick's name has gotten out of Children's Mercy Park as we've exposed it here over the last couple three games, and I fully expect him to be a presence at our games going forward.
We're talking right now with Cliff Illig, the owner of Sporting Kansas City, is with us. It's time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours to see you quickly. Get an appointment right now at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Cliff, four quickies for you. You know, you've been through this a number of times, so I know you're ready for it. There was, at one point, a lot of people really wanting you to be the next owner and your group to be the next owner of the Kansas City Royals. I know you've had, you know, I've had conversations with you, great affinity for John Sherman and an appreciation for him and his group. I think you were certainly much more high profile being an owner already of a sports team, but I think a lot of people didn't know John was, you know, amongst us, right? And a guy that had that possibility. So that has come and gone. But do you see a day where you will look to add to the professional portfolio that you have with Sporting Kansas City? Would you be interested in owning another professional team?
I think the short answer to that is probably not. We've got so much more to do with what we've got going in soccer that's really where we want our focus to be. And, you know, we considered several years ago branching out into the NWSL league, and we ended up not doing that. And it's great to have owners now like Chris and Angie involved in that. It's great to have John doing what he's doing with baseball, and we're going to try to do really well with what we're doing with soccer and don't really need to be involved in something else.
Okay. Then as just a fan, would you be in favor, but a fan that's obviously got a lot of civic interest, you know, at heart, would you be in favor of the next stadium either being where it is now or being downtown, or maybe even being, I shouldn't take away, where your ballpark is, Children's Mercy out in KCK? Where's the right place when it comes time to build the next stadium?
Well, there's generally a belief that downtown stadiums are the answer to both civic and sports team success. I think we've been able to demonstrate with Children's Mercy Park being at Village West on the west side of town that's not necessarily a requirement, especially in a place like Kansas City where it's easy to navigate and get around the, you know, and it's simple. So I am a big fan of the idea of having baseball downtown. You know, I think that would be a really appropriate crown, so to speak, to put on you know, what we want Kansas City's urban core to represent to the rest of the region. And I think it would be very, very successful.
Okay. What conference will Kansas be in 5 years? You're a KU grad. Where will they be in 5 years?
Very good question. And I'm a spectator with respect to all this conference realignment activity that's going on. And I frankly, I'm not even going to try to answer that. Because I think the landscape of college sports, the NCAA, and certainly college football are all going to continue to evolve. And I'm not sure. Obviously, the SEC is going to continue to be a significant factor and I'm not, but it's really hard to figure out exactly what conferences are going to look like in the future. And I wouldn't even begin to speculate. And I think that's from a football standpoint, from a basketball standpoint. I think we've got a great asset in the way that Kansas has always been recognized for basketball and the way Bill manages it. And I'm not sure that conference alignment there means as much as making sure that we don't lose the very special asset we have in Kansas basketball.
Yeah, that's very well said. And finally, do you ever see a time when the MLS moves the schedule to a fall to spring format the way it's played, you know, at least in Europe?
It has gotten a lot of discussion over the years, Ren, and I do not, just because I think that the window between, the major indoor sports in the ending in the spring and then college and NFL football starting up, the window between those, even though it runs up against baseball, is really a great spot to be. I think that works best for us in the climatic conditions that we have in the country. I just can't imagine playing soccer in Minnesota in January in an outdoor facility. So no, I'm not in favor of that, and I don't see anything in the near term that's going to push us in that direction.
Cliff, I appreciate the time so much. We always learn so much from our conversations with you, and I appreciate all the work that you and your ownership group and your family have put into building Sporting Kansas City, the MLS, and also the great work on the World Cup. Thank you very much for the time, and I look forward to our next chat. Hopefully it'll be face-to-face next time.
Okay, that's great, Trent. We'll see you at the stadium.
Time for our Deli Fresh end of the hour question, sponsored by Good Sense, chosen by KC sandwich lovers for 30 years. Good Sense, not because it's easy, but because it's better.
All right, what player has the highest career batting average for the Royals in games against the Cardinals? Brought to you by Good Sense.